Hello, welcome along to this week's episode of the Let's Get Running podcast. Unfortunately, it's just me. If you didn't listen to last week's show, you won't know the news that the Caramel Kid is no longer the co-host of the show. He has moved on to pastures new. I think he's got a lot on with his jobs, and a lot on with his Pokemon, so he is dropping down. But we have got some news. We are teaming up officially with online magazine Fast Running. If you're a UK listener, you probably know a bit about Fast Running already, but if you're not, they are a UK-based online running magazine led by Tom Craggs, one of England's top marathon coaches, and Robbie Britton, ultramarathon runner Robbie Britton. So those guys are both going to contribute. We're going to have a rolling co-host ship. Is that the right phrase? I don't know, but they're going to come and help with the presenting of the show. So next month, starting December, we're going to have a new theme to the show, and we're going to have Tom Craggs joining us. So we're looking forward to that. Should be very exciting. I've got a confession to make. The WhatsApp line was a bit of a disaster. Essentially, I lost the phone. I found it now. I couldn't get the SIM card to work. So I've got a new SIM card. We're starting again with the WhatsApp line. The number to call to leave a message to chat about any of the topics we're talking about is +31 616 279 529. So next month, starting December, we're going to be tackling the issue of participation. So we're going to be looking at essentially a couple of different things, one of which is running too white and middle class. There's especially not a lot of BME, that's a bit of an horrible word, but not a lot of black and ethnic minority runners. Participation of BME runners is low in the UK, particularly at athletics clubs. So most of the listeners might be members of athletics clubs, or they'll run competitively. Why is there not as many black minority ethnic runners in those formats and in those races? We're keen to tackle that issue. We're also going to look at those who might have a disability or perhaps aren't able to run in the same way, and how they found the experience of running. So we've got a couple of guys. Tim Prendergast is one of them, who's partially sighted, and we've got another couple of guests. But we kind of want to know your issues. Why do you feel like we're not reaching out, and there's not the participation amongst sort of these different groups? And do you think personally you have a responsibility to make that difference and make a change? So that's what we're going to talk about next month. Please call in that line. It's +31 616 279 529. And if you leave a WhatsApp message, we'll either play that or discuss it on the show. Alternatively, get in touch at letsgetrunning.co.uk. with some of your topics, your issues, you fancy chatting. We could even have you on the show. That would be nice. On this week's show, we're going to talk to Tommy Hughes. You may have heard of Tommy recently. He ran the Frankfurt Marathon in 2 hours and 27 and 52, not only breaking the world record for a 59-year-old, incredible performance, but also winning the joint father and son combined time world record. So him and his son Owen, they were on Marathon Talk last week talking about that feat. Tommy's an ex-Olympian. He ran the 1992 Barcelona Olympics, and he's got a really interesting story how he got into running originally during the Depression over in Ireland. He talks a bit about how he came back to running. So after the Olympics and after a few more marathons in the end of the 90s, he completely retired, but he came back in 2008, and it's a really interesting way. Well, hear for yourselves when he comes back on. But also in this month, we are talking a bit about health. So it's interesting. What I wanted to get from Tommy is what he puts his longevity down to. And I guess I didn't really ask him that question outright, but there's various things that he talked about, which kind of, I guess, being flexible with his training, but also having just the mentality that he wants to do this, and he's driven, and he wants to achieve what he wants to achieve. And I think what came through is not necessarily you're doing anything particularly special, you're eating well, you're looking after yourself. But the main thing with Tommy is he wants it. He wants to do this, and he wants it. And there's no excuses, really, if you want to go out and succeed. So there's no panacea, guys. There's no secret formula to all this. And Tommy's going to talk about that. And he also talked about one of his health issues he had over in sort of more lately, around 2015. And here is Tommy. Here he goes. So today, on this week's show, we're talking to the current age 59, world best runner over a series of distances, 5K, 10 mile, half marathon and marathon, Tommy Hughes. How you doing, Tommy?
I'm good. Thank you very much, Sean.
I should have mentioned Olympian as well, shouldn't I, really? Is it the second fastest non-Irishman to run the marathon?
I was till a couple of guys this year have run faster, so I've dropped down to fourth fastest.
Ah, so Steve Scully and one more.
And, yeah, Kevin Seward. Yeah, two Northern Irish guys have run. Stephen Scullion ran 2:12:01, and Kevin ran 2:13. I'm not sure of the exact seconds, but he ran faster than 2:13:59. So that's dropped me down to fourth. But that's the way records go anyway. So
yeah,
I'm not
exactly. Sure. You're still breaking them. Yeah. That's good.
Yeah, I'm still breaking them. Yeah.
I mean, we obviously there's been a lot of focus on your performance at Frankfurt. So not only were that's the fastest time for a 59-year-old, but also was it the fastest time for a father-son combined, combined time in a race?
Yeah, that we were going for the Guinness records. It was held by English Father and Son.
Yeah,
and we were going for it. So. It was Owen, my son, that decided we should go for this. So we picked, Owen picked the Frankfurt Marathon as a fast course, and I agreed with him. And we went there, and we broke it. But I think we can improve on it next year. So we're kind of looking at maybe London next year, having another crack at improving it a lot more than this year. So
nice.
Something to build on. Yeah.
Who wasn't pulling their weight then? Where's the where can you see the time gains? Has Owen got to get himself together?
Owen has to gather all the information up now from the Frankfurt Marathon and submit it to the Guinness World Records. So I left it all to him, so he knows more about it than I do. I just turned up and ran as best I could. So,
but in terms of making an improvement on that record. Where's it? Has Owen got to lose those minutes, or do you think you've got the chance yourself to run quicker?
Owen can improve a lot more. But going by his half marathon and 10K times, he can improve to easily 2:20 something. There isn't much more that I can improve, but I will try. I want to run under 2:30 next year, which will mean I've run under 2:30 in 5 decades. So that's my big ambition to try and do that. So if I run under 2:30, I'll have broke the world record for over 60s anyway.
Wow. Okay.
So I've got two birds with one stone, as they say.
And where does that rank then? Like amongst you, because obviously you've competed in an Olympic Games, and where does that rank for you amongst the highlights of your career? Obviously it's great to do it with your son and to share that moment with him. Where does it rank?
Well, the father and son world record, it ranks up at the top for me, you know, because I think running, you have to kind of enjoy what you're doing, and to enjoy getting a world record with your son, I think ranks above anything I've done before, even representing Ireland, I'd have to say. And the Olympics in Barcelona, just to do that with your son, it ranks very highly with me.
Yeah, okay. And obviously not much to choose in terms of times. You were around at the finish line when he came in, so it was pretty nice to celebrate there together on the line.
Yeah, that's the thing. He was in front of me, and then about 3 miles ago, I caught sight of him. I didn't really want to see him up the road, but I caught sight of him, I knew he was in trouble.
Yeah.
And I came along, and I tapped him in the back and says, "You okay?" And he goes, "Yeah, I'm okay." So I went on ahead, and I knew he was going to finish anyway, because he was still chasing. He knew what how fast I went by him, that I was on for a fast time, and he calculated in his head that he had to finish under a certain time, and he was going for it.
Oh, really?
Even at the very end. So I was waiting at the end to kind of encourage him in, but he had already blown a gasket, and he was struggling just across the line. So I was just glad that it crossed the line. I kept saying to him, "Did we get it? Did we get it?" And he goes, "Yeah, we got it." And I go, "Yes." So it was good.
Let's take a look at your career as a whole. When did your interest in running and specifically marathoning start?
My interest in running was to lose weight because I joined, I just got married and was putting on a bit of weight, and I joined the local football club to get the weight off. And my brother-in-law was in a local running club, and I went out running with him with the intention of getting weight off. And I found out I was actually better at the running than the football. So I decided to do a marathon, I wasn't sure how to go about training for it. So I was running 4 miles 3 times a week, and after 3 months, I decided to do the marathon. Obviously, I didn't have enough training and blew to smithereens and ran 3 hours 1 minute. But I thought, if I do the training right, if I put more training in, I could do better. And then next thing, I brought it down to 2:35. And then a year later, I won the Derry Marathon in 1984, and it just built from that. It just built up and built up, and I knew I was good at running then, and everything went into the running and trying to improve more and more. But the fitter you get, the harder it is to improve. That's the problem. You can improve in big leaps and bounds the first few years, but then it comes a certain point where you have to kind of look at your diet, look at this, look at that, to kind of eke out any more performances. So that's how I got into the running, was just by accident.
And were you coached then to make that big step to win like the Derry Marathon? Did you have someone advising you on your training, or did you kind of come up with it yourself?
Yeah, I come up with it myself. Like, I was only in them days, I was just reading running magazines, and I was just buying magazines all the time and reading through them and thinking, I'll try this, and no, that doesn't work, I'll try this. And it was just a trial and error, really. And that's how you learn as well, because if you make the mistakes, you can't do that again. But like, I got up to about 140 mile a week to try to see if that was, help me. But I was feeling tired all the time, and I was doing far too much training, and I was starting to get injured a lot more. So I thought, well, I'll drop this miles down a bit, and I dropped it down to about 100 mile a week, and it suited me.
And how are you able to fit that much running in 140 miles a week? Were you working and stuff at the same time?
No, it was the problem. It was in the 1980s. It's just the way how life went. It was in the start of the 80s. There was a recession. I was an electrician, and next thing, I was laid off, no work at all. And then I found out by accident that I was good at running. So I thought, well, rather than sit about the house, I'll just, start training and do that. So that's how I got into it.
And did so you, could you were able to fund it then through prize money and stuff? Were you able to keep going and keep training and be like a full-time athlete?
Yeah, I was a full-time athlete. I wasn't getting very much money, but I was able to live, as they say, So I just enjoyed what I was doing. I wrote to organizers of races and says, this is what I've done. Would be interested in paying my way over. And a lot of marathons especially would write back or ring and say, yeah, we'll take you. We want you in the races. Like, when I won Melbourne Marathon, I wrote to the organizer and says, I've done this time. Ended up, he rang me about 3 o'clock in the morning. I'm going, who's ringing me at 3 o'clock in the morning? I had to run down the stairs, the phone down the stairs. And he says, we're interested in having you over. Are you interested in coming over? And I go, yeah. So I ended up, I went to Melbourne and I won it.
Really? Wow.
Yeah.
And could you was
So.
there enough money in the sport that you could prize money was all right back in that period, or was it like it is now? It's not, you can't really be an athlete and live in Europe and do that.
Yeah, the prize money was okay, and the 80s, yeah, there's wasn't too bad. I think now it's got very difficult to, even sponsorship or anything, because I'm trying to get a bit of sponsorship too, just for next year. That's all I'm looking for next year. But it's very difficult, especially at my age as well. Even though world records and all the rest, it's still very difficult. I thought it'd be easy, but now I've delved into it, I find it very difficult. So, and in my younger days, it was no problem getting here, there, and everywhere, because you had running agents that would set the whole thing up for you, and take their 10% or 20% or whatever off your winnings and stuff. So,
This is hard.
And what was you kind of your sweet spot, I guess, was around the beginning of the 90s. That's when you ran your fastest times.
Yeah, that was 91. I won the Dublin Marathon, which was the qualifying race for all the Irish were in it for the Olympics for Barcelona.
Wow.
And I won it in 2:14:46. And then they turned around and says, well, you have to run under 2 hours, 14 minutes. Oof. And I said to myself, well, I've won the Marrakesh Marathon the year before, and that's always suited me. So I'll go to there. And that was in January.
Yeah.
And ended up second there in 2:13:59, 1 second below the qualifying time.
Great.
And thought that was brilliant.
Yeah.
And next thing at the end of January, I got a stress fracture in my foot, and the doctor says you'll not be ready for the Olympics at all. So from euphoria to the bottom.
Yeah. You know?
So I didn't give up on my dream. And even though I was in crutches, I was able to do a static bike and train my cardiovascular system.
Yeah.
And I got to the start line, but not in the greatest shape that I wanted to be in. And I'd done the best I could, and I was really happy, and I'll never forget the experience.
Yeah. Why do you think you were able to run so quick then? What was going right in your training that you think that made you run, you know, low 2:13s or the sort of sub 2:14?
I think it's the drive, and really it's the drive and the hoping that you're going to just get faster. Really, everybody goes through the same thing, you know, is trying to find what to take out and what to put into your training, you know. Yeah. And I've tried everything, like, and I know a lot of people say train, you know, do your easy runs easy and do your fast runs hard. But I kind of have the idea of doing your training at 3/4 pace, and that's what I'm used to, and it works for me. And okay, if I go easy and an easy day, it actually does my head in, because it's hard to do to run easy, believe okay. it or not. It's easier to run at a good steady tempo.
Yeah,
but it's just each their own. I think everybody has to find out themselves what suits them, you know. Yeah.
And you mentioned at the beginning about sort of things about diet and those additional things. Did you?
Yeah.
I mean, diet now is huge industry, isn't it? In terms of what's going on. How easy was it for you to do that? And did you have like a winning formula for you, both in terms of diet, but also in terms of the additional stuff, the strength and conditioning, that sort of thing?
Well, I didn't do as much strength and conditioning, but my diet, like as before I went to the Olympics for Ireland, they brought me down to Dublin to see, just to do blood tests and stuff like that there. And to see my diet and look at my diet. And they says, your diet's perfect. There's nothing wrong with your diet at all. So I that's just by reading, getting knowledge, you know, and just working things out in your head, you know, and going from there.
Yeah. And what was that? What kind of was, I don't know, everyone's individual in terms of their diet, but what was your ethos with that? Did you have like a particular, like, you know, no processed food or whatever? Was there something you governed, some rules that governed the way you fueled yourself?
Just eat pretty healthy and no junk food, really. Like, I'm not saying no junk food, but just if you're going to have junk food, just have the junk food, then move on and just eat healthy.
Yeah.
Majority of the time.
Yeah.
Not, it doesn't have to be all the time, but majority of the time. And just keep focused, you know. And a balanced diet will get, you'll get the vitamins and everything from a balanced diet, and you don't have to take any supplements, really.
No.
At the end of the day, I've never taken really any supplements at all.
Yeah.
I've just got a balanced diet and just hope that it's good, and it's always worked out for me.
Great. And what happened then? So post Barcelona, you never quite were able to capture the times maybe that you expected after the race. Where did your career go after that moment?
Well, yeah, after Barcelona, I thought that was the pinnacle of my career, and that was it. That was just time to focus on work. And I was an electrician. I got a job working away from home all the time. You know, it was England and Scotland and all around, and working 7 days a week, working 12 hours a day.
Yeah.
So that was just from one extreme to the other. So I wasn't able to train in that time. So I was actually eating junk food and drinking, smoking and everything.
Really? Yeah.
So it didn't do me any harm at all, believe it or not.
Wow. So you smoked through that period? From the beginning?
Yeah.
Wow. Incredible. So when you did come back, so you came back at the end of the 2000s. What sparked your comeback then? What made you want to come back to running?
Right. In 1988, I won the Belfast Marathon. And in 1998, I won the Belfast Marathon. And it came around to 2008, and I go, well, I would like to have a go at winning the Belfast Marathon again. But so I took 2 months off work. I trained, and the Kenyans were there this time. When I won it before, it wasn't any Kenyans to beat.
Yeah.
So I ended up sixth, but I ran 2:28.
Yeah.
And I'm glad I ran it now, because it was the only marathon I ran in 2000 and the 2000s.
Yeah.
You know, so that was 2008. That was the only marathon I ran.
How fit were you when you decided this time? Had you been running at all, or you just took 2 months and you managed to go from nothing to being fit enough to do 2:28?
Yeah, it just built up from nothing. But that's the way I go. I'd go out the door and hammer myself and not be fit to walk the next day and still go out and train. I'd just train my way through the pain.
Wow.
It's just the way I am.
How old were you then, with that 2008?
I was 48.
Wow. Were you first Irishman?
Yeah. I was the first local home, yeah.
Wow,
yeah, there was
incredible.
A good prize for it. It was £1,000 for the first local. So,
and did you think leading up to it, do you think that you would this was going to be the kickstart for you to come back and start running again, or did you just think, I'm just going to do this race and see what happens?
I just wanted to do that race,
really?
But then I started. I like to look into stats and stuff.
Yeah,
and I looked at into the statistics of the marathon. And I noticed no 50-year-old has gone under 2:30, and I'm going, well, I'd like to be the top person in the world in 2010, 2011 type of thing. So that was my aim then after that, to train and to focus on when I turned 50. So 2010, I ended up, I won Nottingham Marathon in England in 2:29.
Wow.
So I was fastest in the world in that year, and that's just all I wanted to do.
And did your training differ then? Did you have to change things? Because obviously you're an older man now, you're not as sprightly as you were then.
Yeah.
How did your training differ from when you were a professional athlete?
The training didn't differ that much at all. I just, for a marathon, you had to put in a lot of miles. You know, there's no other way around it. You had to put in the miles, because You can less miles training up to half marathon, you can do, say, 70 mile a week, and it'd be sufficient for a half marathon. But when you're talking about a marathon, you nearly have to double that, or just below that, to get that extra miles, to get the strength into your legs, to be able to go that full distance. The body has to become a kind of a machine. It has to kind of be able to in tune with the miles that you're doing, so it just has to develop. And if you don't develop that, you're going to hit the wall big time, you know.
Yeah. And so you managed to continue what you were still working, obviously, and you managed to fit in 100 mile a week in your 50s.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, that's yeah.
Amazing.
I was working. I was based in England because the electrical work that I was doing on site all dried up, so I took a job in the factory that the company I was working till in Leicester, and then I joined the local Leicester Coritanians running club.
Yeah.
And it gave me a spark again to do well, to train well, and there's a good bunch of guys there, and I was able to train along with them and just enjoy my running. You know, so I've took loads of time out, but when I come back, I always have to enjoy it, or there's no point even doing it. If you don't enjoy it, you're going to hammer yourself just for no reason at all.
Yeah, so, absolutely. Yeah, and then I read something about in 2012, you dipped a little bit in terms of your performances. Can you shed some light on that?
Yeah, it was like 2013. They brought back the Derry Marathon, which I'd won in 84 and 85. And they brought it back in 2013. And I'm going, why not? Let's have a go again. So I ended up, I won it.
Wow.
And I thought, well, this is going to be hard to beat, you know, like a 29-year gap or whatever it is, 28, 29-year gap. And then to come back and win it again, this is going to be hard to beat. After that, I started to struggle, you know, and I got tired very easy. I just couldn't figure out. I thought, oh, well, it's old age. That's all I thought, you know. I never thought much about it. But I was getting depressed a lot as well, and I was hitting the alcohol, binge drinking big time.
Yeah.
And it got more and more regular, and finally I was drinking for about 3 months and near killed myself. And my partner Anne, she took me to the local clinic. They'd done a blood test. They were giving me withdrawal tablets, I don't know, real strong stuff, and vitamin stuff. And then next thing, my brother and his wife was looking after me. I couldn't even look after myself. It was that bad.
Wow.
And next thing, they got a phone call. I got a phone call saying, you need to come into the hospital straight away. And next thing, I was on the drip in the hospital.
Wow.
So they were pumping me full of vitamins and stuff. And and then they told me that I had this condition, parathyroidism. It was a parathyroid disease. And it was nothing to do with the drink, you know, the alcohol that I had this. I just had it. And I was taking calcium from my bones and just putting it into my bloodstream. And that's why I was getting tired all the time. So they gave me, I got sorted out, and I says, I'm going to get off all these tablets. It's the only thing I'm ever going to do.
Yeah.
But there was one tablet I was going to have to stay on for the rest of my life because of the parathyroid disease. So I says, how do you get off this tablet? And they says, well, you need to get an operation to remove that parathyroid gland. And I said, well, yeah, okay, I would like to get that done. So from being never in hospital, I was getting blood tests done every week and going for checkups and this and that and the other thing. And I got an operation done last August.
Yeah.
And ever since then, I haven't looked back.
Great.
You know? And I don't know how long I've had this. You know, it could have been years and years and years. I don't know.
Wow. And how do you, like, can anyone just pick it up? Is it just sort of something that just you unluckily, you know, unlucky just, enough to contract?
I think I was unlucky enough to contract, but it taught me a lesson to, you know, don't, you know, it's better to go and get a blood test done to see if you're deficient in anything.
Right.
If I had done that, if I had went and just get a normal blood test, I would have shown up a long time ago.
Right.
But I never went near the doctor. I don't like going to doctors, and some people don't like it, and I'm one of them. And I think it would be good for people just to go and have a wee blood test just to see, you know. If they feel there's something wrong with them, just it'll show up in your blood test.
Because I was going to ask a little bit about whether those health problems had meant you change your training at all now. Have you had to adapt things because of that, or is it it's more just a monitoring thing?
No, my training's it's even got heavier. It's I'm up to 120. Well, I'm not actually now because the marathon's over, but
yeah.
I usually build up 12 weeks before a marathon. It's usually I get it up to about 120 and hold it for 6 weeks or so before the marathon. You couldn't do that every year on year out because you'd end up, you know, injured all the time.
Yeah.
You know? Marathon training hasn't changed that much for me. You know, I kind of do the same thing. And I do a lot of races just for, instead of doing fast workouts, I'll do a race because I find that in a race, you push yourself more than you will do in even a fast workout. I'll always hold myself back in a fast workout. You know, I'll not push that extra mile, as they say.
Yeah.
But in a race, you'll go further in a race than into the red than you would do in training.
Because I was going to say, I look at your power of 10 and it was, I had to scroll down, and that was just on 2019, the number of races you'd done this year. There's a lot of racing.
Yeah.
There.
Yeah, that's my training. That's my training. You know, that's all training towards a marathon for me.
Right.
You know, all the distance that I do is training towards a marathon.
Mm.
You know, like even the build up to this, I want to do well. I don't want to put pressure on myself in this. But this weekend, I'm going to run in the British and Irish Masters Cross Country in Liverpool, and my build up for it is two park runs. Just to get the leg speed going, and a cross country race as well.
Yeah,
I done a park run last week, and I've done a PB a week after. It wasn't last week; it was the week before.
Yeah.
A PB in the park run of 16:18.
Wow!
And then I ran a cross country in the evening time, a race, and then last week I done a park run and up in Belfast in 16:34.
Yeah,
and that's my build up to this race this weekend, because it's a 5 mile race.
Yeah,
so I need to get the leg speed going rather than the endurance, because the endurance is already there.
Yeah, it's locked in.
So, yeah.
Okay, and I read something about your you mentioned a bit about the strength and conditioning. You don't do a lot of that, but no stretching at all. You don't do anything like that sort of these let's say conditioning stuff. You don't bother with that sort of thing.
Yeah, well, I have my own wee routine, and it's before I go for a run, I'll do 30 press ups and 30 sit ups.
Yeah.
And I'll do a bit of stretching, not really that much, not even 5 minutes stretching, just a bit.
Yeah.
And I usually start off, you know, slow, you know, just over 7 minute mile for me. And as the body warms up, it just automatically faster and faster.
Yeah.
And then I'll decide in my training then what I want to do. Do I want to back off and just save a bit for tomorrow, or do I really want to go full on in my training? And that's the way I work.
Yeah.
It's just the Kenyan way as well. It's just go how you feel or how you want it to go.
Okay.
And today I went out for a 10-mile run, and I ran really, really easy.
Yeah.
And it's tough to do.
Yeah,
for me. But that's the way I have to do it. Yeah. You know.
So you don't really you don't sit and think, right, I've got to do and have a very structured, regimented plan that goes from January 1st to April 20th, and say this is
what definitely work. Not.
Definitely not. No.
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 No. No. I'll go out for a run if I decide I want to do. I went out for Sunday. It was very slippy underfoot.
Mm.
I went out and I said, I'll do 10 now, and then I'll do 7 in the evening.
Yeah.
But when I went out and I'm going, well, I'm going to struggle to get back out for a 7 in the evening. I may as well do a 17 now. And that's just the way I go.
Right.
I go out and just switch. I'll decide in my head what I'm going to do, because I train on my own a lot.
Right.
So I'm in my own person. So if I decide I want to do this, I'll just do it. And if I don't want to do it, I'll not do it.
And how do you fit it with work? Are you working now?
No, I'm not working at the minute. I had time off for the Frankfurt Marathon. And as I say, I'm a self-employed electrician. I haven't really got anything set up again since then.
Yeah.
So I'm still a full-time runner.
Right,
without
great.
Getting, yeah, it's good in a way, but I need to pay the bills as well. So,
so we need a sponsor.
Yeah.
You've got to up your Instagram game, Tommy. That's the way to make money these days, surely. Take more photos of you eating your dinner or something.
I think I'm too old for that kind of thing. You know, it's a young person's thing.
So, why do you think? Like, it's a hard question to ask to pin in. Down to one specific thing, but why do you think you're getting faster now? So 2019 has been the fastest year since you came back, is that right?
Yeah, 31 years.
So why is that? Why is it, well, why now?
I think it's because of that operation that I had to remove the parathyroid gland because it had been poisoning my system.
Right.
That's the only explanation I can see.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
This kind of gave me a new lease of life, you know, and my strength's come back. My power recovery is, it amazes me, you know, right. It actually amazes me how quickly I can recover from tough training runs.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, incredible.
But that's me again. I'll push and push and push till maybe something gives, but nothing gives, so I'll not, you know, absolutely annihilate it altogether. Yeah. I'll just kind of push a bit, you know, coax it.
And you mentioned like earlier about the 2012 was a time when you had like confidence that you were going to get faster, and the reason why you're running faster is you were inspired almost to keep going up and up and up. Does these age bests, do they do a similar thing to you? Are you like, is that what inspires you now, is to keep, you know, being the best in the world at your age?
Oh, definitely. Definitely. Like, as I say, when I thought I could get back to where I was before when I was 50.
Yeah.
And then I've see the goals ahead when I'm 60, then it's definitely driving me on to get that. When I'm 60 is just 1 year of pure running and get everything I can out of that year. And then I'll take it from there after that. So it's just as 1 year at a time, 1 day at a time, 1 week at a time.
Yeah.
I'll just take it from there. You know, that's all I can do.
Yeah.
And really at the end of the day is enjoy the whole thing.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Fantastic. Great. Fantastic. Unfortunately, more questions. You've got three quick fire ones. So they're basically just single answers. And they are, if you could be running anywhere now, where would it be?
Yeah. Somewhere warm.
Yeah.
Because I don't like the winter time. Yeah. Somewhere warm and daylight in a forest beside the sea.
Lovely.
I'm not looking for much.
The second one is recommend us something. It could be like a book, film, or an experience you think we should try.
Well, I've read that book, Born to Run, and I really, really enjoyed it. I read it twice. It starts off slow, but it is really, really interesting. It makes you think, you know, about things, about running and all the rest.
Yeah.
So Born to Run was a good book. I like that the Barclays Marathon on Netflix. I enjoyed it. You know,
yeah,
it's very quirky, but I really enjoyed it. So,
fantastic, great stuff. And the last one is: what, in your opinion, is the greatest endurance performance of all time?
The greatest endurance—that's a good question. I think the Tour de France is the greatest endurance, and that happens every year.
Yeah,
and it has to be. I love my cycling as well.
Yeah,
I love my motorbike, watching the motorbike racing and stuff. But I think that must be the biggest endurance test for any athlete, is to do that 3 weeks of full on racing, day in, day out.
Yeah, I ran at the Mont Ventoux this year, and it knocked me out. And that was just one run at the Mont Ventoux. So. I can't imagine doing it back to back. It'd be crazy.
Yeah.
Excellent. Well, thanks very much, Tommy, for your time. Good luck this weekend.
Thank you.
The show's going to go out next week, so it would have happened by now, but good luck for that, and our listeners will look out for that and see how you got on. But good luck for your forthcoming.
That'd be brilliant. Yeah, thank you very much.
Cheers, Tommy.
Thanks, Sean.